All right, go ahead and grab your Bible. We're at Ecclesiastes 3. There's a Bible under your chair. If you don't own one, that's where we're going to hang out at tonight. And so we're going to finish out Ecclesiastes 3 this evening. So we're going to be in verse 16 to 22 is where we'll be at. All right, that's on page 471. If you don't own a Bible, feel free to keep that one. You can take that home with you and use that with the Advent reading guide we've got out there in the information booth. Now, I love doing Advent, and one of the primary reasons I love doing it is, one, you get to play with fire. That's always a good part of it. The second part is that as it relates to church, some people think that church is just some 60-year-old guy's invention, right? Like we're the first generation in the history to ever celebrate it. And so one of the cool parts about Advent is that it's been going on for 400 years. And the cool thing about what we're doing in Ecclesiastes is that this is 3,000 years old, what we're going to be getting into tonight. All right, so Evan's going to throw up a little intro. If you haven't been with us before, here's kind of the basis of Ecclesiastes and what we're working with tonight. It's written by this guy named Solomon. He was king over Israel, like I said, about 3,000 years ago. Solomon gets a lot of money, gets a lot of access, gets a lot of opportunity. And so what he does with that is he does what everybody does when they get it, all right? They live life like a rap video, okay? And so he does that. And then what happens after he spends enough time doing that is he recognizes, okay, these things aren't doing what I thought. And so Solomon starts to come back and he says, here's my reflection on life after I've had a chance to live it harder, all right? And so Ecclesiastes is going to be a bit aggressive tonight. One of the things I like about tonight is that when you go through the Bible, it's not like I can plan to say something on a certain night. So if you're a guest tonight, it's not like I made up tonight's sermon because I knew you would be here. All right, so it's not like I was like, oh, it's not how it plays. All right, it's just, it's where we're at. And so what happens with Ecclesiastes is going to be a little harsher, a little aggressive. But what that does is when he's that harsh and that aggressive, it causes us to get out of kind of the lie and the rut of some of the stuff we're in and then start to get a better context on what life is really about. All right. And I think you'll understand a little bit more once we get into it. All right. So again, page 471, Ecclesiastes 3. We're reading verses 16 to 22. So here's where he says, moreover, I saw under the sun that in the place of justice, even there was wickedness, and in the place of righteousness, even there was wickedness. I said in my heart, God will judge the righteous and the wicked, for there is a time for every matter and for every work. I said in my heart, with regard to the children of man, that God is testing them, that they may see themselves are but beasts. For what happens to the children of men and what happens to the beasts is the same. As one dies, so does the other. They all have the same breath, and man has no advantage over the beast except the opposable thumb, for all is vanity. All go to one place, all are from the dust, and to dust all return. Who knows whether the spirit of man goes upward and the spirit of beast goes down into the earth? So I saw that there is nothing better than a man should rejoice in his work, for that is his lot. Who can bring him to see what will be after him? And so on your handout, we've got this thing called a bottom line, and it's something that if you get nothing else from our time together in the Bible tonight, we want you to get this one line, and it's this: justice for all. And then you can quote Judge Dredd. Justice for all. Justice for all. Now, here's what we've got about justice. America loves it. There's certain parts that of America that love it more. Texas is a big fan of justice. And so there's certain places where you see we love justice. And so we see that in our legal system. We have a justice system. And so that's represented there. You see it on television because when you get into winter break here in a couple weeks, you're going to see in the daytime, most of it and every channel has a different judge playing judge on television for people to walk in and act a fool on TV and have a judge give them something. So I don't even know all the judges. I just know Judge Judy because she's old school. But we love justice. I mean, how many television shows are represented about cops or about attorneys? I mean, Law and Order, it seems like they're covering every piece of legal work to do Law and Order, right? So that CSI has a different town. Right, I'm just waiting for the small town to get some. CSI, Fayetteville. Right, like that would just be legit. Or CSI, Wichita. Kansas is rowdy. So we love to see justice represented on TV. And so we even see that in how we communicate. A very popular way of saying things is this idea of like karma, right? That what goes around comes around. Justin Timberlake, I thought I told you, hey, that what goes around comes back around. All right, so we love that because when something happens where somebody does something shady, you're like, oh, they're going to get it back, right? That always is how we play. Why? Because we love justice. And so if somebody cuts you off in traffic because they're speeding and then gets pulled over by a cop, you're like, told that dude. And you love it in your heart. It just feels good in your soul. Why? Because we love justice and we celebrate sentencing, right? So like that guy who went crazy at Batman, right? When he gets his sentence, people go, man, that guy got what he deserved. Some people went to a movie and he tried to shoot some people, right? So then we celebrate sentencing and we have this way of celebrating people that get what they deserve. But when it comes to you and me, we plead for mercy when it comes to justice. Why? Because when you get pulled over by a cop, you're like, officer, here's some things I just need to tell you real quick. My wife is in labor and you're not even married, right? So there's those things that are happening. There's a zombie apocalypse happening right behind me. I've got to flee. So we all have these ways of pleading for mercy. And so ladies try to use a competitive advantage, right? So they like to say, I'm a girl, typically he'll be a guy. So if I'm just sweet and innocent and kind, that he'll let me off without getting a ticket. That's your way of saying mercy. All right, so you may not call it mercy, but you like bat your eyes and try to be, I'm sorry, officer, where would I find my insurance? And I don't know if you play it like that. If you took offense because you're a girl, my bad, all right? But there's all of those things there. So Solomon recognizes our love for justice, and he says, now here's some of my observations about what I see as it relates to justice. So 2 Timothy 3:16 is something we're going to share every week because we feel that all scripture is breathed out by God, all of it's profitable, all of it teaches, all of it corrects, all of it causes us to grow. Now, you've probably never heard a sermon on Ecclesiastes or spent 6 months going through it. But the reason we like Ecclesiastes is there's something for everybody to learn in it. And what we'll say about Ecclesiastes, even if you don't believe the Bible tonight, and I would assume somebody doesn't, if you don't believe the Bible, you can't disagree on Ecclesiastes, right? Everybody's going to go, that's right. And then what we're going to do at the end is we're going to take the lens of the gospel and we're going to put it on, all right? So here's verses 16 to 18. That's where we'll start tonight. And we're just going to walk through verse by verse. So here's what 16 to 18 says. Moreover, I saw under the sun that in the place of justice, even there was wickedness, and in the place of righteousness, even there was wickedness. I said in my heart, God will judge the righteous and the wicked, for there is a time and a for every matter, for every good work. I said in my heart, with regard to the children of man, that God is testing them, that they may see that they themselves are but beasts. And so the first point we've got up for you at the top is that true justice is hard to find. Now, we've capitalized justice on purpose. It's not a typo. Capital justice is the institution and the pursuit of justice. Little justice. What happened? True just. Bow. That is a typo, okay? But true justice is hard to come by. All right, so that's why we capitalize justice. And so what it's saying about justice is that it's hard to come by. It's elusive. There's times where you can't find it because we've all seen stories of people who deserve justice and didn't get it. People who deserve to be vindicated, people who deserved something to come their way, and they didn't get that. And so then what Ecclesiastes starts to say is that you'll go places and expect that that institution will deliver justice. An example is a courtroom. That when you go to a courtroom, you would expect, I'm going to get justice here because this is a courtroom and that's what it does. But we've all heard stories of judges who have been paid money so that they'll deliver a certain outcome, juries that have been tampered with, runaway jury, and have had people get paid so that they would deliver a certain outcome, or lawyers who lie on behalf of their clients in order for them not to have to face the penalty that justice deserves. And so a courtroom is a perfect place where you would say, okay, justice is supposed to happen here. And so what Solomon starts to say is because we can't find justice where we want it, that that's just like what it is to be an animal. The animals are that same way. And I'll throw out an example for you that's really easy. There's this internet video that got a bajillion hits. It's called The Battle at Kruger. And the story is that this wildebeest goes running from a pack of lions. Okay, so as it's running away, it gets caught up by a couple lions. So the lions start eating a wildebeest, right? Now, wildebeests are really big. All right, it's not like it's just some small cow. All right, this is a gigantic animal. So you got three lions that are all over this wildebeest. Well, then the pack of wildebeests come back and they start to rescue little wildebeest that's getting eaten. So what happens is they push this wildebeest lion feast down towards the water. So once the lions break off, as all of a sudden a crocodile comes out of the water and starts eating the wildebeest. So now you've got crocodile and lion eating wildebeest. All the while, all the other wildebeests are trying to free the wildebeest. Now, that is a jacked up day to be a wildebeest, right? Because he was just running around, grazing on some things, then all of a sudden, lion, crocodile. Like, that is a jacked up, like, you've had some days where you got hurt, right? Like, you jumped off of your deck one time, and it didn't work out so well, and you're like, woo, that hurt. This crocodile's getting chomped up. Okay, so there's part one. The second one, it's really easy because it's the time of year, is when deers jump through the road. Right? They're just trying to find a crossing, right? They were like, oh, I'm grazing. This is delicious. And then try to run across the road and all of a sudden get blasted by a car. So I had a friend of mine last week. We were going to Oklahoma City. His wife was driving into town. When she was driving into town, a deer jumped across the road. She was driving a Scion XB. All right? So this deer goes jumping across the road. She hits the deer. The deer does not, well, the deer lives, okay, for a little bit. So the deer lives, her car is inoperable. Like, it's totaled, right? Deer wins against vehicle. If you ever go to higher country, elk always win. If you go to even higher country, a moose will kick you if you run into it, all right? So it just goes that way. So as this deer plays out, the deer's then hit by a car at 60 miles an hour. Ouch. Okay, so the deer's like, man, I just got jacked up by a car. Well, this police officer comes and then sees that the deer's wounded and just walks up to it and goes, so the deer just survived a hit by a car, and this cop just goes, shoots the deer. So my friend, his wife is in the car freaking out, right? Because she thought she killed a deer, and then she just saw a deer get murdered, okay? So she's like, oh my gosh. And then he calls somebody up and is like, hey, I got some deer on the road. If you and your family want to come pick it up. They drive up in a pickup, scoop the deer up, throw it in their trunk, and then drive out. And you may be like, now where's this all at? All right, where's this going down? It's just outside of Springfield on the way to Willow Springs, all right? So this isn't somewhere you could be like, I don't know, man. I don't know. Rogersville, Willard, I'm looking at you right now, okay? So that's a place where justice isn't reflected because that deer was just trying to cross the road and it got blasted, all right? And so that's where Solomon starts to say, as the deer was thinking, oh, hey, I'm just going to cross the road, black cow. It's the same thing that happens with you and I as it relates to justice when we pursue it and say, I should get it here, and you don't get it. All right, so he continues out of there. 19 to 22 says this, for what happens to the children of man and what happens to the beast is the same. As one dies, so does the other. They all have the same breath, and man has no advantage over the beast, for all is vanity. All go to one place, all are from dust, and to dust all return. Who knows whether the spirit of man goes upward and the spirit of beast goes down into the earth? So I saw that there is nothing better that a man should rejoice in his work, for that is his lot. Who can bring him to see what will be after him? So the second plague we've got for you is what happens when we die? Bum, 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 bum. What happens when we die? Now this answers the question that a movie was asking you when you were a little kid. And that movie was called All Dogs Go to Heaven. All right, and so that movie played out, okay, what happens when dogs die? They go to heaven. What happens when cats die? They do not go to heaven. And so there's this thing of like, what happens to animals? What happens to humans? And so Solomon takes just a very, Ecclesiastes is, here's what you look at when you look at the planet. And honestly, when you look around, you're not thinking something happens when I die. Like at your just core, you don't go, man, I think there's something that happens after this. In the beginning, you're just like, who knows that I could just die and die, and that be it. And so Solomon just takes this very honest, when you look at the planet, who knows what's going to happen? Man, who knows if people are going to go up and dogs are going to go down? I mean, who knows what we're talking about here? Now, if we're reading Ecclesiastes 3, last week, Ecclesiastes 3 said, God puts eternity into our hearts. And what that means is that you could look around and say, it doesn't look like anything's happening. But in your soul, there's just kind of this naggingly persistent, something happens when you die. Like, it's not just a, sweet, that was over. And so people start to come up with all kinds of different conjecture as to what happens, but something's going to happen when you die, and we don't get to play Scrooge. We don't get to have the ghost of Christmas future come and say, let me show you some things, Scrooge. And we get to float ahead and say, oh, look, there's me at 40. That is so not what I expected. And so that's not the way it goes, okay? So you're not going to get a chance to see it before you get there. All of it is determined based on what's happening as you go. And so some of you are starting to play the card, well, I don't got to do this, and I don't got to do this, and I don't got to do this. Let me just say, if your lifestyle is being lived is, I don't got to do this, it's going to be rough when you're 40. Because there's certain things that you're supposed to be building upon right now, and one of them is willingness to do something, right? And so we're kind of the generation that doesn't want to flip hamburgers. We're like, I don't want to do that. I'm above hamburgers. I'm not built for that. Whereas our grandparents, when they flipped hamburgers, they were like, man, I'm going to own my own hamburger shop. Psh, psh, psh. And then as people were like fighting back, right, as their supervisor was like, you're not flipping good enough hamburgers. They're like, I'm going to open a store and I'm going to crush this place. And you just, our grandparents had that like, oh. So we look at jobs and we go, man, I'm above that. And our parents were like, oh, you watch what I do with this hamburger. And so your grandparents probably have this edge about them. They're like, why aren't you going out and working hamburgers? And you're like, Pops, I'm too good for that. There's something that comes with just our willingness to be able to say, okay, I'm willing to do that. I'm willing to go there. I'm willing to walk that out. And so when it comes to us in life, we're all building for something. And that's Ecclesiastes. That's all we've got from Ecclesiastes tonight. We're all going to die. What happens when you die? Okay, so it's from there that anybody going to disagree? I don't know if I'm not going to die. I don't know. I might not be. I'm going to be the first one who didn't. Okay, knowing that, here's where we're going to go. Luke 18, we're going to throw that on the screen for you. And all the stuff we've got through tonight, we've got a lot of work to do, all right? So we're just going to throw a bunch of scriptures on the screen. You've got them all at the bottom of your handout. So you could just use the Bible to help you write blanks, all right? So here's what Luke 18 says, all right? And he told them a parable to the effect that they ought always to pray and not lose heart. He said, in a certain city, there was a judge who neither feared God nor respected man. And there was a widow in that city who kept coming to him and saying, give me justice against my adversary. For a while he refused, but afterward he said to himself, though I neither fear God nor respect man, yet because this widow keeps bothering me, I will give her justice so that she will not beat me down by her continual coming. Then it says, and the Lord said, hear what the unrighteous judge says. And will not God give justice to his elect who cry to him day and night? Will he delay long over them? I tell you, he will give justice to them speedily. Nevertheless, when the Son of Man comes, will he find faith on the earth? And so our third blank for you is this. Even unjust people want justice. Even unjust people want justice. Even unjust people want justice. I'll tell you of an injustice that hit me. It's actually called an injustice. But an injustice that hit me this week. At our house, we have our driveway. It connects to our neighbor's yard, so people use our driveway like a thoroughfare. So they walk in and out of it. We have a certain dog at our house that will kill you if you try to come into our house. So when we put him outside and people who he doesn't know goes walking by the house, he's terribly annoying. Okay, so the other night we were sitting in the house, and as we were sitting there, I thought I saw somebody go running through our drive. And I was like, no, that's odd. We live on the north side of town. Some of you don't even know what that's like, but it's like North Springfield, you know, where it's dangerous to drive on nickels at night. Wah, wah, wah. Okay, so we live right over there, all right? So as we're in there, I was like, I think that was somebody running through our yard. And I was like, maybe it's hide and go seek. Who knows? So we wake up the next morning, and Rachel texts me, and she's like, have you seen my iPod? I was like, no. Upon further investigation, her iPod got ganked out of our car, along with, we had this ghetto FM transmitter. If you don't know what an FM transmitter is, it means we don't have an auxiliary plug in our car, so we hijack a radio signal and plug that into the iPod and then commandeer it so we can play music through it, all right? Go look at it at Target, all right? So we have and this iPod was like 5 years old, okay? So it was the iPod Nano that has a screen. There ain't no touch capability to that. All right, there's a little spin wheel and a click. All right, so she got that. And it was a Christmas mix on there. So this dude, woman, who knows, ganked our iPod. Right, so I'm like, ooh, that's unjust. Ooh, I'm mad. I want my iPod back. I want my iPod back. That's my wife's iPod. Did you just feel that injustice? Now, here's what's going to happen, right? Say that man or woman has their iPod stolen. You know what they're going to do? Woo, I want my iPod back. Let me find that person who's got my, like, I wanted to run the neighborhood and see if I saw somebody walking with an FM transmitter. Because you don't pull that janky anywhere. They're like, oh, where'd you get that? Right? Throw his shoes over the power lines and see what goes down there. So we all want justice. Even unjust people want justice. Okay? So as we see it in this passage, there's this judge who is wicked, and he says, I'm going to give this woman justice because she asked for it. So as it relates to you and I, even unjust, wicked people want justice when it's their time. So you could know the most horrible person in the world. Where does everybody go? Adolf Hitler, right? So he probably had a pair of boots stolen at some point, right? And I'm sure Hitler was like, woo, when I find that person who stole my boots. Now, he was committing all kinds of injustice, killing millions of people. Anybody going to debate whether Hitler was a wicked dude? No. And so when it relates to Hitler, he's like, man, who stole my boots? Because he recognizes the need for justice. But again, as it says to you and I, we're not going to call back justice on us. Right? So if you stole somebody's iPod, you're probably not like, woo, I hope they find me with their iPod. You're probably not playing that. And so we say, I don't need judgment. I'm not in need. Justice doesn't need to be given out because of what I've done. I don't deserve it. No one needs to come get me as it relates to justice. But the verses we're going to share as we kind of paint the picture forward is going to show, in fact, that that's inaccurate. So 2 Thessalonians 1:5 to 10 says this. This is evidence of the righteous judgment of God, that you may be considered worthy of the kingdom of God for which you also are suffering. Since indeed God considers it just to repay with affliction those who afflict you and to grant relief to those who are afflicted as well as to us when the Lord Jesus is revealed from heaven with his mighty angels in flaming fire, inflicting vengeance on those who do not know God and on those who do not obey the gospel of our Lord Jesus. They will suffer the punishment of eternal destruction away from the presence of the Lord and from the glory of his might when he comes on that day to be glorified in his saints and to be marveled at among all who have believed because our testimony to you was believed. And so the next blank we've got for you is Jesus is just in justice. So Jesus is just in his giving out of justice. And this is one of those passages and this is one of those ideas that people outside of church, when they look at church, they say, oh, this is what you guys are always talking about. Hell. And that you always get up there and the one thing you say is believe in Jesus or go to hell. That's just kind of the context of church. And one of the criticisms of very vocal people who are against organized religion is that they say, here's where you see one of the failings of religion. Because they get little kids around and they say, let me tell you about hell. There's fire and wailing and gnashing of teeth. You know how you feel when you don't get a snack? Then feel like that, on fire. Do you want to do that? Do you want to spend eternity in fire without snacks? No. Then believe in Jesus. How great of a deal is that? And so that's where most people will say, okay, here's my criticism against church. They just go, everyone burn in hell. Now, if you've walked downtown, there's some dudes who say that. There's some guys who've got big old signs that say, burn in hell. And I don't know anybody who looks at that guy and goes, I want to talk with him. Tell me about Jesus, sir. There's no one who does that. What happens is everybody is like, that guy is a chump. Let me take a picture and post that to Instagram. And so, or you get some guy who will hold a lighter up behind him and go. So that's how it plays. Now here's the reality. Everything that passage said as it relates to hell has little to do with burn in hell forever. What does it say? That there's two kinds of justice that God gives out. The one is given for those who obey the gospel as it relates to those who have been offensive to them, right? So in this time in Christian history, it was ugly to love Jesus. Like they would lead you out into the Colosseum and feed you to lions for entertainment. So like, I don't know how many people were like, "Ooh, you want to go to church today? Yeah, what's up, man? We're going to go to the Colosseum. They're going to lead us out from there. And then we're going to be there as kind of like the intermission while the gladiators are fighting. And then a lion's going to eat us. Do you want to sign up for that?" No one's following, all right? So what God said is that there's going to be justice that's given for you because of what you've suffered, and then there's going to be justice given to those who disobey and deny the gospel of Jesus. And so that's us saying that we are actively against and performing an injustice against God, and as a result, God then has the ability to say, I can give out justice because of your injustice. And so there's nothing in this that's like, hey, welcome to the planet, burn in hell. It's as we have eternity in our hearts and we recognize that when we start doing certain things, it says that our sinful nature and our way in which we disobey God is not us just saying, I want to do it my own way. It's us denying everything internally we're built for and then saying, God, I just want to kind of stick it to you. So do whatever you're going to do. And then that's the way God says that if that's the response, then that's the way it goes. But all of that's conditional that if you accept Christ, then the punishment's paid for. And one of the miscommunications of Christianity is that if you accept Christ, then there is no punishment for you anymore. There is absolutely a punishment for you upon accepting Christ. Absolutely. It's paid for on Jesus. So you don't get to say like, oh, man, there was never... It's like you just say, oh, I was going to get a spanking, and then I dodged that bullet. No, someone else got spanked. Right now, you've pulled that on your little brother or sister. Like, you were deserving. You were like, no, them. And then you heard them getting spanked and were like, whoo, dodge that one. Right? Or you've had somebody else play sucker and took a punishment that you didn't, like, that you deserve, but that you pawned off on them. Right? So we've all played that. And so here's how it goes with Jesus, that there's justice needing to be served, and Jesus is the one who serves it. And that upon accepting Christ, God's justice is paid for on Jesus. So he takes the punishment. He takes all of the penalty. And that's where when you see Jesus die, it's the worst death ever recorded in human history. Ever. And people who don't even love Jesus say that. Historians are like, that's the worst way to die. Because every punishment he received should have killed him. And so he should have been killed as he got whipped 39 times. He should have been killed when he got beat all those times. He should have been killed when he got whipped all those times. He should have been killed when he was dying on a cross. So all of those ways in which he should have died at the layers of punishment he received, all of that was for your sake. And then it says that God laid upon him the eternal punishment that you would suffer for. So you get very earthly punishment, and okay, there's consequences for sin, but then you get very eternal punishment that's just pressed on him for every person who's ever lived in all of history. Now, there's 6.5 billion people living in the world right now. That is a lot of people. When you talk about the thousands upon thousands upon thousands of years of human history, that's a lot of people. And if you talk about the number of years that are going to go on from here to there, we've got to the 21st at least, cross your fingers. And so knowing that's true, we've got thousands and thousands of more years that could come. And Jesus had upon him the weight of it all. And so upon accepting Christ, that you say, God is in fact just, and that his mercy to me is that he gave it to Jesus where I deserved it. And then here's what Revelation 11 says. It says, then the seventh angel blew his trumpet, and there was a loud voice in the heaven saying, the kingdom of the world has come to the kingdom of our Lord and of his Christ, and he shall reign forever and ever. And the 24 elders who sit on their thrones before God fell on their faces and worshiped God, saying, we give thanks to you, Lord God Almighty, who was, who is, and who was, for you have taken your great power and begun to reign. The nations raged, but your wrath came, and the time for the dead to be judged, and for rewarding your servants, the prophets and the saints, and those who fear your name, both small and great, and for destroying the destroyers of the earth. And so the next blank we've got for you is that eternal justice is better justice. Eternal justice is better justice. In America and in other nations around the world, we have this thing called parole. Parole is when you're supposed to be serving a sentence, and based on a committee's decision on your character and on your conduct in how you're supposed to be serving, that they can let you out for good conduct. And so you can get people who've got a 15-year sentence who serve 8 because they had good conduct, and they said, hey, you got the point. We'll let you out. Now, it seems odd to me that you would say this deserves 15, but because you got 8, we're okay with that. So that's kind of parole. Eternally, that's what people have called purgatory. That in classical history, that there's been this thing called purgatory. And purgatory is kind of that in-between place where when you die, you go to purgatory, and God says, do you really want to suffer like this for eternity? Yes or no? And when you start to suffer, God says, have you had enough suffering? And everybody goes, yes. And God says, okay, come on up, man. You've paid it. And so what happens about 1,000 years ago was the church started having people pay money so that they could start racking in money, and they created this horrible racket out of it to say, now your grandma, she died. And we all know how wicked Granny was. Do you want Granny to continue to suffer for that? Give us $20. She'll get out early. And they're like, thank you. Granny might be free. She might have some more. Man, you know how Granny was in her teen years. Give us $50. And so they started to do it. Now everybody goes, that's wicked. If you've been around the church long enough, you've had a situation or scenario where you've gone, I told you that was what's wrong with church. Man, get around 50 people every day and every week. You're going to find some jacked up stuff. You've been around your friends and you've had some jacked up stuff happen, and they're your friends. Okay, so this imperfect people, we just made a room where 50 jacked up people got together. Some stuff's going to happen. All right, so then this guy, Martin Luther, goes, man, that is jacked up that you're charging people money to get their grandparents free from hell. That's time for that to stop. So he nails this thing to the wall. There's a riot. They try to kill him. Here's the deal with purgatory. Doesn't exist. But everybody likes the parole idea. Everybody likes the, okay, if I jacked it up and God lets me go there for a little bit, he's going to say, are you ready for your time out to be over? I mean, you've been a bad kid, done some bad stuff, didn't do so well. Are you ready for this to be done? And then we're all going to be able to get out. But in the same way, like if you had a crime committed against you, right, and a member of your family died, and the person who killed that member of your family got out on good conduct early, you're not going to say, I'm so thankful for that. Like, I am so glad that person who murdered my wife is able to get out earlier. I'm never going to have my wife for the rest of my life, but I'm glad they got out early. No one says that. And so as it relates to justice, everybody loves lasting justice when the crime is fitting. Because lasting justice is better justice. And God's justice ultimately is eternal. And says, the best way for me to do this is when you're walking through life is not for me to just start flicking you in the leg when you start doing bad stuff. Like, oh, man, I was hanging out with this girl the other night. Pa-dow! And you're like, okay, I'm not going to hang out with that girl ever again. He just live it out, and justice will be had. And here's the last verse we're going to share with you. It's Revelation 20. And this is kind of the culmination of it all. Then I saw a great white throne and him who was seated on it. For his presence, earth and sky fled away, and no place was found for them. And I saw the dead, great and small, standing before the throne, and books were opened. Then another book was opened, which is the book of life. And the dead were judged by what was written in the books, according to what they had done. And the sea gave up the dead who were in it. Death and Hades gave up their dead who were in them. And they were judged, each one of them, according to what they had done. Then death and Hades were thrown into the lake of fire. This is the second death, the lake of fire. And if anyone's name was not found written in the book of life, he was thrown into the lake of fire. And then the last blank we've got for you is that Jesus is both judge and justifier. Jesus is judge and justifier. Jesus is the one in whom he gets to say, I am the judge. Here's how it's going to play. He's the one who justifies and says, mercy is granted to you. And everybody's going to be judged. Confessing and believing in Jesus or not, everybody's going to be judged. There's no gray area. There's no space in which you could say, not going to happen. And one of the things that even Christian people will do is like, oh, okay, because believing in Jesus now, it means I'm never going to have God say, what did you do with what I gave you? Revelation proves the point that everybody is going to stand before God, and he's either going to say, your name's written in the book of life, and then for those who are written in the book of life, he's just going to go through and say, all right, what'd you do with it? And so this is kind of that ultimate thing. And again, this is the place where people go, I don't know. I don't know, man. That's all the stuff that's jacked up about church because all they do is talk about hell and fire. If you've been around here, this is the first time in a really long time we've dropped the hell, fire, and brimstone. If you're a guest, what a great night to come, right? You're so thankful. But when it comes to Jesus, the confessing and believing in Jesus solves everything. That it solves it all. Where Solomon says, man, I don't know what happens when you die. Who knows what happens, where you're going to go? Who knows how this is all going to play out? The scriptures emphatically say, here's what happens. There are those who confess and believe in Jesus, and they're justified by him. And there are those who do not. That all of us, you can recognize in your soul, whether you're goody two-shoes or you're the worst child ever. We all recognize that there's things in us by which we're guilty and justice is deserved to be served on our part. And you're either going to let Jesus deal with that or you're going to let you deal with that. And the worst place for us to be is to stand before a judge and say, I got to take the weight of the punishment. It gets even worse than that when you stand before a judge eternally and he says, you heard, you knew, you denied. And what's he to do with that? Like, what's Jesus to do with? You heard, you had opportunity, you knew it to be true, and you said, I don't want it anyways. Like, what's he to do? Go, oh, that's cool. So for us tonight, man, my intent is not just to drop hellfire and brimstone bombs on you. My intent is to say, oh, the love and the mercy of God, that though he sees us in our sinful state, says, oh, what deep love and affection I have for them. That I would send myself into the planet, suffer the worst death imaginable in their place, die, be raised back again so that they don't have to endure what I did. For me, all of this about judgment is just such great joy in my heart because I look at it and say, Jesus endured all of that. So when I read Thessalonians, when I read Revelation, I'm like, oh, Jesus paid that. Oh, Jesus paid that. I definitely deserve that, but though he paid it. And so we stand tonight at a great opportunity to fall in love with Jesus again. And if the scriptures say what they say, then what we've got tonight is just some really easy responses for us. We've got some places where there's just going to be some things that pop out. The first would be to confess and believe in Jesus, that if you come in tonight and you wouldn't call yourself a follower of Jesus, that you could say, man, I could confess and believe in Jesus. The second would be that you're in need of justice, right? That there's been sins committed against you, and that's just something we take to the Lord, that he wants justice, that he ultimately gives justice, and you say, there's been something committed against me that's unjust. And I know, man, in this room, there's horrible atrocities that have been committed against some of you. And I know that. I just know backgrounds and I know stories. There's been some horrible injustices committed against you. God is very just. And so we can take that to him tonight. The third place would be like healing from past injustice. So you had something happen to you. Justice has been served, but there is a deep wound. And if you've lived long enough, you know that there's some things that just can start to get roots in your heart and can start to commandeer everything. And so there would be some healing that would need to happen by some stuff that's happened in your past. And then the final part would be confession of your injustices. So whether that's against a person, whether that's against somebody, or that's things that you've just committed in your brain, those things that nobody knew about, but you know if you had opportunity that would be one of the most unjust things the world has ever seen. There's that one. And our final thing is our confession, our belief, and our trust that God is ultimate and good and right and his justice, and to trust him and to say, man, Jesus, I trust you tonight, for today, for tomorrow, and for eternity to come. So Tyler's going to come up here. If you want to stand to your feet, we're going to take an opportunity to pray together, and he's just going to lead us in some worship.